30 minutes past eight. Brother Bukadaji, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
How's our very own Ibn Battuta doing?
Alhamdulillah. Things are always wonderful in Durban. I just got back, as you know, Malala.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's always this joke that the Joburgers have about the Durbanites. They say, when you just reach Durban, they ask you, when you come, when you go.
That is a myth, Malala. Let me just clear up that immediately.
Okay.
Immediately. I want to clear up this myth. And also, I've never heard any Durbanite say, hey, pour some mineral in the tumbler. Please, I don't know where you people generated all this. You know, we are very sociable. We are very caring beings here in Durban. Very caring. So, you know, when we see you at the pavilion, we ask you, hey, when you came? The reason why we ask you when you're going is so that we can arrange something for you over the weekend. Now, imagine if I cook, you come to Durban, Molana, and I say, hey, when you came? And you say, I came yesterday, and I just keep quiet. And then on Sunday, I prepare a nice big pot of biryani and I want to meet you at the Blue Lagoon. So I call you up at your hotel and I said, Molana, or I just call you up on your cell phone and I said, Molana, I want you to meet me later at the Blue Lagoon. And he said, no, man, I'm already in Arismith. So you see why we ask you, because we are very sociable, we're very caring, we're very warm people here in Durban.
Yes, you stop properly at the Robos. Now, why I started with that is that I think when it comes to you, we have to ask you all the time, where you're going or where you're coming from.
Well, Molana, as usual, I went on an amazing trip, Morocco and Spain. And, of course, Morocco is exotic, Casablanca, Marrakesh, Fez, and, of course, magical Spain. What can I tell you? In Spain, you have mixed feelings. On the one hand, you marvel at the splendor of the golden age, the great centers of learning, the palaces and gardens of Granada, Toledo, Cordoba. You get transported back in time. Of course, all of Andalusia, southern Spain, is full of tourists from all over the world, marveling at the beauty and culture of that era of Islam at its pinnacle. People who are not Muslims, enchanted with the finery and sometimes even ostentatious representation of Islamic culture. And we had a non-Muslim guide who looked like an older Idris Kamisa. He was a professor. Well, he didn't have a beret. He was a professor. And his PhD was about a particular Islamic center in Spain and the dynamics of that era. He was so passionate, Maulana, speaking in detail, savoring everything he described as if he was enjoying a tasty meal. You could see that he was deeply absorbed in the events of that time, a non-Muslim passionate about Islamic Spain. I told him exactly that, and with a twinkle in his eye, he said that he loved it. So we also loved it all, but the whole experience, our excitement was tinged with a great deal of sadness, because every so often the thought hit you that from those lofty heights, the pinnacle of Islamic learning and majesty, we have plunged right down into the present reality of hopelessness and disunity. An ummah that is battered and rudderless in violently stormy waters. What saddens and shames me is the way we are right now. Andalusia, a place of mixed emotions.
Well, the violence continues unabated in Palestine.
Yes, most certainly, Maulana. Make no mistake, dear listeners. What you witnessed over the past few months is the battle for Al-Aqsa. What has emerged and understood by the Palestinians finally is that Al-Aqsa is in danger of being taken over by the right-wing fanatics. And so, the almost daily battles are escalating. As young and old Palestinians try desperately to keep these invaders out of the Al-Aqsa grounds, so also do the right-wing fanatics, these fundamentalists, are more and more determined to lay claim to this holy site. And they were, of course, and they are, protected by the Israeli security forces, and the right-wing government is either turning a blind eye to this escalation or tacitly encouraging such actions. The government that has been described as a government by the settlers, for the settlers. So while Al-Aqsa was the flashpoint for these battles, the situation has now dramatically changed and has spilled out into the towns and cities. The battle of Al-Aqsa has now developed into an intifada against the whole system of oppression and brutal occupation. You know, Netanyahu made a statement a few days ago. He said, the aim of the Palestinians is to destroy Israel. And I thought about it for a while, and I wondered why he thought that it was perhaps unreasonable for Palestinians to think that way. It's very simple logic. If something troubles you, you get rid of it. You have a headache, you take steps to get rid of it. People were brutalized by apartheid. It was a violent oppression. And so people obviously fought against it to get rid of it. Nothing surprising about that. It's perfectly natural. Nobody will say, hey, I got a headache. I think it's fine. I will just happily enjoy it. Nobody will say, hey, apartheid is horrible. But, that's life. Let's just carry on. And so for the past 67 years, what have the Palestinians experienced? And the answer is one big throbbing headache. Land confiscations, house demolitions, arrests, detention without trial, torture, checkpoints, humiliation, brutal repression, injuries, death and destruction. It's a long list of pure terror. So the question to every reasonable person, what would you do if you were subjected to such oppression? What would you do if you were subjected to such brutality? Would you take it lying down? The answer is clear. You will want to get rid of it. Whether you are Muslim or Jew or Christian or Buddhist or agnostic or atheist or whatever, you will stand up for your rights, for justice, for a better life. And so in the streets of Jerusalem and Tel Aviv, it would seem that a tipping point has been reached. Tipping point. We are now witnessing a new expression of anger and rage, the wanton stabbing of Israelis by Palestinians. And, you know, I often wonder at the level of despair of these mainly young people. How can they face the bullets and very likely death as they protest with stones against high-caliber weapons? How can they go out and stab an Israeli, knowing full well that they will be shot dead immediately thereafter? And let me say something that I said many, many times previously. It is very, very sad indeed that Palestinians and Israelis are dying. And all because of a thoroughly misguided ideology, Zionism. The idea that you can just go over and deprive a people of their land and homes and subjugate them and then expect them to lie down and accept it. And if they do object, you brutally suppress them. This is sheer madness. And, of course, you can then expect death and destruction. This has been going on in Palestine for the past 67 years. And so Israel and its supporters in the Western media, once again, typically focus on the stabbings alone. What's wrong with these Palestinians? What barbarism is this? Stabbing innocent people in the streets? the stabbing is stripped of all context. Crazy Palestinians who kill for no reason. And so they have to be mowed down. Nice, easy equation. Israel reacts to stabbings, and so Israel has to take all and every means to protect its citizens. Take all and every means, and the world thinks that that is fine. So a rocket is fired from Gaza, and Israel can flatten homes and kill people, even a 5 months pregnant woman and her toddler. It's the Palestinians to blame. If they didn't start it, then this wouldn't have happened, you see. And that has been Israel's policy all along. Kill a fly with a sledgehammer. It's called disproportionate force. That has always been the policy of Israel. You poke me with a pin, I cut your hand off. And so once again we see drastic action. Collective punishment. Palestinian areas in and around Jerusalem have been sealed off. And that makes life very difficult for Palestinians going to school or work or anywhere. Next, destroy the homes of the families of those who carry out stabbings. And right now, 7 homes have been targeted by Israel for demolition. And number 3, the relatives of those who commit stabbings will have their IDs giving them residence in Jerusalem. These IDs will be cancelled. In other words, they have to leave their homes in Jerusalem where they perhaps have been living all their lives and go into exile, into the West Bank or Gaza. And so, dear listeners, no one knows where this latest intifada will lead. But one thing is for certain. Israel will crack down severely, meaning expect more Palestinians to die. So far, over 1,300 Palestinians have been shot over the past 11 days. And in the streets of Tel Aviv, Israelis are demonstrating in huge numbers, saying that Netanyahu must do more, much more, to smash this uprising. And of course, true to form, the world is silent, except for the usual nonsensical statements that, for example, both sides must refrain from provocative action, or both sides must get back to negotiations, or that Palestinians must show restraint, and so on and so on. The two people who are never silent and who I admire greatly, one is Amira Hass, who will be coming to South Africa later this week on a lecture tour. Later this month on a lecture tour. And I advise everyone listening to go and listen to her. She writes fearlessly about the brutal oppression of the Palestinians. The other person I admire greatly is Gideon Levy, who also speaks his mind very clearly and very strongly. And so, yesterday, I read his latest article in the Israeli newspaper, Die Haaretz. It's very powerful, and I'm going to read the whole thing to you. I hope that the lady who wrote the article a week ago, Jewish lady who wrote an article a week ago, criticizing and condemning Amira Hass for standing up for the Palestinian rights, I hope she is listening. And maybe next week I will speak about this letter that she wrote. This is what Gideon Levy wrote yesterday. He says, and if I can get my computer moving, then maybe I can tell you what he said. Writes, Gideon Levy, and his article is entitled, Even Gandhi Would Understand the Palestinians' Violence. He says, through the haze of self-righteousness, media propaganda, incitement, distraction, brainwashing, and victimhood of the past few days, the simple question returns in full force. Who's right? There are no justified arguments left in Israel's arsenal. The kind a decent person would accept. Even Mahatma Gandhi would understand the reasons for this outburst of the Palestinian violence. Even those who recoil from violence, who see it as immoral and useless, can't help but understand how it breaks out periodically. The question is why it doesn't break out more often. From the question of those who started it to the question of who's to blame, the finger is rightfully pointed at Israel. At Israel alone. It's not that the Palestinians are blameless, but the main blame lies on Israel's shoulders. As long as Israel doesn't shake off this blame, it has no basis for making even a scrap of a demand from the Palestinians. Everything else is false propaganda. As a veteran Palestinian activist, Hanan Ashrawi, wrote recently, the Palestinians are the only people on earth required to guarantee the security of the occupier, while Israel is the only country that demands protection from its victims. And how can we respond? As Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas has asked in the Haaretz interview, how do you expect the Palestinian street to react after the burning of the teenager Mohammed Abu Khadr, the torching of the Dawabshep home, the settlers' aggression and the damage to property under the eyes of the soldiers? And what are we to answer? To the hundred years of dispossession and 50 years of oppression, we can add the past few years marked by intolerable Israeli arrogance that's exploding once again in our faces. These were the years Israel thought it could do anything and pay no price. It thought the defense minister could boast he knew the identity of the Dawabshe murderers and not arrest them, and the Palestinians would restrain themselves. It thought that nearly every week a boy or teenager could be killed by soldiers and the Palestinians would stay quiet. It thought military and political leaders could back the crimes and no one would be prosecuted. It thought houses could be demolished and shepherds expelled and the Palestinians would accept it all humbly. It thought settler thugs could damage, burn and act as if Palestinian property were theirs and the Palestinians would bow their heads. It thought that Israeli soldiers could burst into Palestinian homes every night and terrorize, humiliate and arrest people, that hundreds could be arrested without trial, that the Shin Bet security services could resume torturing suspects with methods handed down by Satan. It thought that hunger strikers and free prisoners could be rearrested, often for no reason, that Israel could destroy Gaza once every 2 or 3 years and Gaza would surrender and the West Bank remain calm, that Israeli public opinion would applaud all this with cheers at best and demands for more Palestinian blood at worst, with a thirst that's hard to understand. And the Palestinians would forgive? This could go on for many more years. Why? Because Israel is stronger than ever, and the West is indifferent and letting it run wild as it never has. The Palestinians, meanwhile, are weak, divided, isolated, and bleeding, as they haven't been since the Nakba. So this could continue because Israel can, and the people want it to. No one will try to stop it other than international public opinion, which Israel dismisses as Jew hatred. And we haven't said a word about the occupation itself and the inability to end it. We are tired. We haven't said a word about the injustice of 1948, which should have ended then and not resumed with even more force in 1967 and continued with no end in sight. We haven't spoken about the international law, natural justice, and human morality, which can't accept any of this in any way. When young people kill settlers, throw firebombs at soldiers or hurl rocks at Israelis. This is the background. You need a great deal of obtuseness, ignorance, nationalism, and arrogance, or all of the above, to ignore this. Powerful words from Gideon Levy.
Indeed. Light at the end of the tunnel.
The magistrate says to the accused, I find you guilty of pickpocketing and fine you 200 rands. The lawyer says, Your Honor, my client only has 100 rands at this stage, but if you adjourn the case till after lunch, I'm sure my client can come up with the balance while mingling with the crowd in the court. The Maulana in the Sipingo Hills Masjid, Maulana, was telling another Maulana, you know, I was getting fed up with all the monkeys coming into the masjid every resort time when we are in Jamaat and making Salah, and the monkeys start raiding the place and my flat right next door and stealing everything. But I solved the problem. And the other Maulana said, hey, how did you do that? The Maulana replied, yesterday I saw the whole troop of monkeys outside, and I stood in my balcony and I shouted that, today I am declaring that all you monkeys are now Muslims. Since then I haven't seen them in the masjid. And here's the final one about Maulana. It's a bit philosophical, right? A Maulana was in a queue at a petrol station. It was the start of the long weekend, so the queue was very long. Finally, the petrol attendant waved at him to a petrol pump that was available. And the attendant by the name of Suleiman said, sorry about the delay, Maulana, but it seems as if everyone waits until the last minute to get ready for a long trip. And the Maulana laughed and replied, I know what you mean. It's the same in my business.
Uncle Levy, as always, Jazakallah for your time. Much appreciated.
Always a pleasure, Maulana.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was this week's edition of the Big Picture program. Still to come on Sabah Muslim Drive Time, we take more of your responses to our SMQ this morning. Do you agree that fees at universities are very high in light of what's happening at WITS? And we play you different renditions of Qasida Burda.
The Big Picture program was sponsored by Steering Auto Inspector Car in Benoni, the thinking person's car dealership. Steering Auto, the home of pre-loved cars.